Hi, Mindy. Great to have you with me today.
Great to be here, Jody.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about a thoughtful leader.
Yeah. Now,
that is very interesting because what is a thoughtful leader?
Well, it's like a thought leader who has put more thought into their stuff.
What a wonderful way to put that, because people often get confused. And I've been reading your book. Look here. Wonderful. Yay. And it's great. And I love the way that you think that people must use more of their hearts, their head and their heart. So that's great. And I'd love you to tell us a lot more, because leaders nowadays are faced with a lot of challenges. So what are the challenges that leaders face today?
Well, there's the age-old challenge of time. Not enough time, more pressure, and you know, there's more demands on people, more emails, more everything, more noise, and they're still meant to do their job. And if you are a self-employed person and you're leading the whole business, you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders. So that's not really any new or different. The big thing that I talk about in the book and in all my conversations nowadays is the fact that in this noisy, crowded world, everybody still wants to stand out, but it's not just a question of shouting more and shouting louder, because people are doing that and it's creating even more noise. So it's about taking a step back and being more thoughtful. And that's a challenge too, simply taking the step back, right?
Yeah, I know, being an entrepreneur myself and a startup now, because I'm starting my business, there's just so much going on, but you sometimes do miss out on that heart stuff. So I think that's a really good point. Okay, so now, I was, like I said, as I was going through your book, I really found it interesting when you said moving from competing to complete. What do you mean by that?
Well, you can't help but compete, because many times when there's a piece of business, people are looking around for a supplier and they're looking at more than one supplier. So you may be in a competitive situation, and that's going to happen. You can't eliminate the competition, even if you'd like to. So the thing that I usually recommend to clients, and what I talk about in the book, is not focusing so much on the competition. So if there is a piece of business and you know it's going to be a competitive situation, not to obsess with them and what they're doing, and to, you know, try to find that USP by looking at what they're doing. It's about feeling complete and really making yourself very strong and confident, and then presenting that almost in isolation. Of course, your prospect or client is going to be looking and talking to other people, but you remove that whole context and you can feel a lot calmer when you're not looking at what they're doing and worrying about what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, like you said, having the confidence in what you are doing. I think that sometimes we waste so much time watching what others are doing and then doubting ourselves. So I really love that point in your book. So good one there. Now, how can we improve the way that our leaders are thinking nowadays?
Firstly, it goes back to what I said right at the beginning about carving out that time and space to be able to step back and to prioritize that. So, you know, you will have heard, and you know, all the viewers will have heard people saying, you know, you've got to create time and space to think. But instead of saying, yeah, actually putting something in the calendar, prioritizing it, if you are in an organization with other people, holding each other accountable for that kind of thing, and even creating rewards and incentives for people who do take their thinking time out. And, you know, being creative about it, because that could create the best return on investment that you've had all week, compared to just hammering it and burning the midnight oil, or, you know, working even harder. Sometimes taking that step back and breathing and walking in nature and some of the other things that, you know, we know to be beneficial can actually create the result you're looking for. It's counterintuitive.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that especially I'm in laughter and all of that, and that actually taking that break to laugh and to actually let your mind go a little bit and relax really does help with the creative side and help you be more productive. So that's wonderful. Now, I know that happiness in the workplace is something that everybody is talking about all the time. And that is why I'm having this conference, is because I really want to delve into what it means to be happy. So where do you see being a thoughtful leader helping in the happiness of a workplace?
Okay, great question. And I think the key area where thoughtful leadership fits in is the fact that people can feel fully expressed and they can feel valued and their ideas are getting heard. And if they're getting recognized and rewarded for those ideas, it just creates a more fulfilled workplace. So this is happiness on a deep level. Fulfillment is you know, the ultimate happiness. It's more contentment and fulfillment. So that tends to have great results because when people do feel fulfilled and rewarded and valued, they don't tend to take as much sick time. They're not looking for their next job. They're not resentful. In fact, they're willing to do even more for the organization. And, you know, people just feel special. That's the best way that I can put it. So the strategies in the thoughtful leader are there not just to say, you know, do a little thinking, but it can have some long-term effects on the individuals and then the organization, which is obviously made up of those individuals. And it can have a profound effect and it can have, you know, a lucrative and profitable effect.
It's all about the money.
No, not all, but
no, absolutely. And that is it. You know, I firmly believe in, because I do happiness programs, I can't say happiness loosely like that, but it is all about trying to help the people that are in charge, that are the leaders, to see that these people are spending 80% of their time working. We've got to give them something. So how would you suggest a leader is more thoughtful?
Okay, so thank you for actually separating that out, because there's the leader in his or her position, and then there is the team or the, you know, the company. And I firmly believe that leaders need to be walking their talk and setting the example. Mm. So first, they need to learn and internalize these principles or similar ones. They need to be prioritizing thoughtful leadership and thoughtful conversations. They need to be creating the framework and the context and the culture that actually inspires people and doesn't make them afraid that if they're staring into space, they're going to get in trouble. In fact, they're probably coming up with their best ideas. So, but it has to start at the top. So the great thing about it is that people can begin to see the effects. So the people that we work with at Real Thought Leaders, they begin producing their best stuff, really impactful, really exciting and disruptive content that is turning heads. And other people want to emulate them. So there's nothing like having an inspirational person as a boss or at the top of your organization to spur you on, to model them. And that can create a whole culture of positive, excited thought leaders and thoughtful leaders.
Oh, that's great. And I really think people should be focused on starting with themselves, because you can't change other people. But definitely if you're doing it, then people seeing how that's working, they're going to follow suit. So that's great. I see in your book, you've got something called Centrepreneur. I don't know if I'm saying that right. What is that?
Yeah, you can rhyme it with entrepreneur, like centrepreneur, if we're French.
Entrepreneur sounds ever so ever. Tell us what it's about.
It was a little play on words, but most people focus on the entrepreneur aspect of being entrepreneur. And if you just add a letter C, it does actually remind you to be centered. And my belief is that people in your organization, so that, you know, your staff, your internal stakeholders, as it were, and the external ones, as in your clients, prospects, the media, you know, shareholders, they are all looking to the leader to provide guidance, to provide direction, to provide a certain amount of confidence. And the way they measure that is whether the leader appears confident himself or herself. And the way we get to that confidence is by getting to absolute clarity. And the way we get to that is by centering or grounding oneself. So it's a whole process. Confidence doesn't just appear like that, certainly not in your stakeholders. So if we take it back 4 steps, which is the work that I think needs to be done in many organizations, then you've got that starting point. You've got that foundation to build the clarity and then the confidence. And, you know, that will result in confidence in the market.
That's great. Now, I'm all about empowerment, and my book is about total empowerment. So how do you see being a thoughtful leader helping empower us?
Firstly, there's feeling empowered to be able to express yourself, as we were talking about before. So that is a culture of empowerment, and that starts at the top. So we've covered that. Then there's a feeling of embracing that. So you could try to empower somebody, but unless they take that on board, unless they grab the mantle, they may choose not to be empowered. I don't know if you're following. So
yeah.
Empowerment is a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly with thoughtful leadership, if everybody at every level is putting the right kind of thought and the right amount of thought into their work, into their content, into their relationships, there may come a time when just being empowered is not enough. I mean, if they're empowered to think for themselves, they might actually have some quiet time and think, this is not the organization for me. And the empowered leader is the one who says, great, I will support you and I will help you make that move, even if it means losing you. So that's just one example. There's a lot of interesting examples from people who are working from fear instead of really opening up and empowering, really empowering the others in the organization.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you've been doing this with companies at the moment, and what are some of the case studies or the feedback that you're getting into companies that are being more thoughtful or leaders being more thoughtful? What is the feedback you're getting?
So the leader, an entrepreneur, if we go back to that person, the person who founded the company or the person who's currently running the company, you know, they have a huge responsibility. And there's something about being able to spend a bit of their time on thoughtful leadership, feeling that they're really making an impact, feeling that their best and most exciting and disruptive ideas are taking shape and getting out there in the market. That's something that, well, you can't buy that. That's, some people call it leaving a legacy. So my older clients tend to call it leaving a legacy because they are thinking in those terms. Other leaders who I work with are feeling they're building their profile and credibility, and they're building on something solid. So people know they have a reputation or a profile. They don't always understand how much they can control that profile and the way others look at them. So this kind of work is truly empowering, because no matter what happens, even if they're in an employed position and something happens and they end up not working for that organization before, they don't feel so much like the rug's been pulled out from under them, because they've already started to put together their own IP, for lack of a better word, their own ideas. Yeah, you know how I feel about IP. And but they feel that their essence is still there, and that they can bring that to another organization or another startup. And so there's lots and lots of ways in which this could play out. In terms of employees, if they're not running the company, then the greatest benefit, of course, is to feel that their ideas are being heard and seen. And even if they don't have aspirations of running a company or anything like that, everybody likes to be heard. Everybody likes to feel valued.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that, because for me, you know, you can work so hard for a company and then you don't get that good feedback, that pat on the back, which some of us need. And then you give up a little bit. And when you're working so hard, you just lose hope. And I think that's a very important thing to do, is to remember your staff. They're working hard for you. Without your staff, you don't have your business.
That's right. Yeah. And this is a special area that I don't think a lot of people would think about. So they might do the obvious things like a bonus, either, you know, financial or a gift or something like that. But the gift of self-expression, I really can't explain how important that is. And the feedback that we've had from organizations is, you know, I feel inspired that this is, you know, my boss is so impressive. I would never want to work for someone else. I mean, crazy stuff like that. We hear all that's what a boss wants to hear.
Yeah, but you do, because I have my personal story. It's like I was working 18 hours a day for somebody else. I wasn't making the salary that I should have been or that I was promised, because whatever reasons. But at the end of the day, I wasn't making the money, and then I wasn't getting the praise for what I was doing when I was actually the face of the company. And it turned out that because of the climate and the way that the economy goes, and things are changing and laws are changing, and there's all that uncertainty, my boss at the time was a little bit careless with his words, because he was suffering. And he was like, well, how are you going to be worth your money? He didn't mean that, but he said it. And by the time he came back, you know, to say, that's not what I meant, he'd already said it. And I was just like, really? And I walked out. Wow. And I'm glad, because I did. But, you know, and that company, I did everything for them. And so that is just me, my personal story, where being valued is so important, because you do so much. I think it's a very big point that a lot of bosses don't realize.
Yeah, there's an expression I heard at BNI, babies cry for it, soldiers die for it, and it's recognition, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, I'm grateful, because what it actually did, it empowered me to now go, hey, I'm good at what I do. I'm going to take it on my own. And that's what I did. So now I'm here.
Unfortunately, Jodi, not everybody feels that confident about their ideas, about their ability to express themselves. And so having this kind of skill to develop yourself as a thought leader, and more importantly, as a thoughtful leader, this can take you throughout your career, so that, you know, if something happens, you at least know that you're capable of writing and speaking and doing videos and coming up with interesting things. And you, in a way, you impress yourself. Now you've got that. You're special. You're in the minority. I think there's a lot of people who really need to be given that as a gift.
Yeah, and that is why it is so important, and why I loved your topic. And I think that it's great to actually, hey, guys at the top, think about those people that are your company. So yeah. I'm all behind it. Now, you're going to give us a wonderful list of what you call thought leadership secrets. That's wonderful, because I'm all about giving value and pointing out some things. And I did this with you at Inspire, and I absolutely loved it. So I would like to just touch on a few points that you have given us, just because we're going to give it as a download, but I would like you just to elaborate a bit. I'm going to go, you've already touched on this one, but I want to go on it again. It's about the first one, carve out and schedule thinking time and space. So why is this so important?
Well, it's a very busy, busy world. And as human beings, we are capable of taking in just so much in terms of stimuli. We're not capable of taking on more and more and more. And we're being influenced, and we're being bombarded with stuff and messaging and emails and social media and everything all the time. And we know this, but we don't have too many strategies for coping with it. So the way the body copes with it is, at some point, you know, people shut down, have a breakdown, or just get sick and end up spending a few days in bed just for a rest. or, you know, having some other kind of outlet, like, you know, drinking themselves into oblivion, or, you know, and those, you know, there's more positive ways to approach it. My belief, And this has been borne out by myself and other clients, you know, trying these things out, really testing what works, is to create that space and learn not to feel guilty about it. What it means is, yeah, switch off the devices. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now really, switch them off. Put the time in the calendar. You'll remember at Inspire, I said, you know, who creates thinking time? Oh, yes, show me your calendar, show me your diary. And people are like, oh, oops. Yeah. And that's a telling sign. And if you ask to see my calendar at the moment, I need to put in a few thinking slots because, yeah, we're busy. Well, I have all of my excuses. I'm traveling and I've got all this. And, you know, who has time to stop and think? And actually, you don't really have time not to, because something's going to come and bite you and make you stop unless you stop.
Yeah, and the reason that I wanted to reiterate this point is because I am terrible at this. I'm so passionate, especially now, I'm so passionate about what I'm doing that I have to be torn away from my laptop. I literally have to be dragged away because it is my own business. I am a startup. I am setting up. But it's true. If I don't have that time away and that time to just relax and stop thinking, I'm not going to be of any value. So it is a point. So I think that idea about putting it in your calendar, just put it in a few minutes. It's great, you know. And that's where we, as laughter yogis, laughter yoga also helps us because we get to free the brain, free the mind, because you can't think of other things while you're laughing. So it's a good point. So that's a good one. And then here's another one. You say, brainstorm profusely, but privately. This is very interesting. Tell us more.
Yeah, I have, firstly, I give people permission to be bold and opinionated. So this is one of my bold and opinionated ideas. And as such, not everybody has to agree with me, but I will explain it and then people can have a think, you know, and they can try it out maybe. Brainstorming, the word itself usually implies a group of people and, you know, either a whiteboard or a flip chart or getting lots and lots of ideas out. And people know the rules more or less. You're not supposed to shut any ideas down. You're supposed to just get them all out on the paper and not say, yeah, I tried that. But, you know, so just no filtering. But the issue when you are brainstorming in a group, well, there's several. One, if a really brilliant idea comes up, who owns it?
Uh-huh.
The other thing is that you don't realize, but you're immediately influenced by the group, by the group think, or by an individual. You don't. This happens very quickly and very subtly in your brain, subconscious. But you can't help it because we're human beings. And, you know, if you have a really crazy idea, you're either going to filter it yourself because you'll look like an idiot or sound like an idiot, or you will think and filter someone else's idea or cut them off or, you know, all kinds of things go on in the group. It's a very safe environment when you're with trusted people, but the safest environment of all is on your own. And people think, well, I can't brainstorm on my own. Sure you can. Sure you can. And in fact, if you do your best brainstorming or idea generation or ideation or whatever you want to call it, if you do it on your own first, you can then bring something a little bit crisper to the table. And it's just one idea. Or if, that sun is really bright.
Yeah.
That's trying to move myself. I'm moving around. See, I talk about being creative. How's that better?
Yeah. Awesome.
So you have to be willing to explore things without any fear. And I just believe that it can't be done as well in the group. And that, you know, especially if you're a certain kind of person, we're not even going to get into like introverted versus extroverted. Some people are easily led. You can see where I'm going with this thing. What I'm trying to do with all my work nowadays is protect people, create a safe space, teach them new ideas, strip away lots of stuff that's been added over the past 30 years, and get back to some basics. Because we can't even think nowadays.
Oh, I hear you. So that's a good one. So here again, you and I find this fun. And because we're all about the creative, this one works for me. Read more fiction and less nonfiction, because we're all about self-help and self-development and self. Tell us more.
And business books. See, there's a place for them. And I love the fact that people do read how-to books, especially how to improve their business and how to improve themselves. Fantastic. The issue with reading too much on one subject, especially your subject, is you do get a bit blinkered or blinded if you're in the States, and you don't really see anything outside of that. So it's great to be focused, but you can be too focused. And your brain, again, I'm not a brain expert, but I think that's a good thing, because I'm just providing an observation. And the observation is this: your brain starts to say, oh yes, I know what this is. This looks familiar. Yes, because you've read 18 different books on the same subject. Of course it looks familiar. So your brain starts to shut down. This is my belief, right? I don't want to be a neuroscientist, because I'm just giving you, you know, like Mindy's layperson's explanation of things. And what happens is you're not really seeing it, you're not thinking, you're not learning. And in fact, in that shutdown, you're probably wasting your time reading something, because you're not, it's not even going in. When you stop reading on your subject, it's refreshing. It's kind of like if you've always had your holidays, your vacations in a particular place, and you go somewhere new, it's like, ooh, fear of the unknown, but it's exciting as well. And the thing about fiction is you just never know where it's going to go. I like the fact that it originated from somebody's imagination. And that means if you are into spiritual things, your imagination is tapping into their imagination. Call it, you know, the collective conscious, the collective unconscious. It's something magical that goes on. But the best thing about it is it just takes you to another place. And you can relax and your heart rate can slow down, and you know, it is a real escape if you read, you know, something. That's why I particularly like science fiction. It's so out there that you just have to let go of you know, your preconceived ideas. Sorry, I could go on this topic. I love encouraging people to read fiction.
Yeah, and it's so necessary. Again, taking the break, freeing your mind, going somewhere else, growing new neuropeptides, having new thoughts, and you never know what that's going to light up. So great.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's true. And then you talk about checking in with yourself. How is that important?
Now, this one takes a bit of effort, and people might need to work on it. What I'm talking about is going inside, you know, stopping and saying, okay, how does this feel? The words that you want to ask yourself about are congruent. Is this congruent for me? You want to ask, you know, align, is this aligned with where I'm going? Does this feel right? That's the plain English version. does this feel like the thing I should be doing or focused on? Because life is short. We all know this. Yeah. And it's just stopping, going inside, being honest, and then choosing, what am I going to do about it? So, for example, if somebody's in an employed position and they check in with themselves, they might check in with themselves, you know, on a weekly basis. Great. They might have that feeling of angst. No, something's not right. Something's not right. I really need to be doing something different. But they don't just do what you did and walk out the door unless they've got a plan and maybe a cushion. But over time, there's only so much that you can take. If you never checked in with yourself, you wouldn't even get to that space where you'd recognize that something was wrong, much less start to figure out a plan to do something about it. Now, when you're talking about content creation and, you know, producing your best thought leadership content, which is really what this work is about, this is essential. Because if you are not aligned with your values, your message, your mission, where you personally want to go, you could allow yourself to just write or just speak or just do videos or just churn out content and add to the noise. I think it's a real shame. I'm not here to stop anybody doing anything, but I really would like people to go deep and search inside themselves for what they really want to be producing and the impact they really want to be making. And if they've not quite got there, then to be brave enough to have another go, take a different angle, get some help. That's what we do, thought leadership strategists and coaches. Get some kind of strategy for yourself. Otherwise, you're just going to continue doing the same old thing and having the same feeling of angst, resentment, or just depression.
Yeah, definitely. I think people are afraid of asking for help, actually. I think that's a big point.
I think in terms of thought leadership, that this is a new area, and I don't even know one other person who calls themselves a thought leadership strategist. That's just what I chose to call it 8 years ago when 24 Karat Bold came out. I thought, well, that's what it is. Thought leadership needs to have a strategy. And that in itself is radical, because throw the term around and it's not always strategic. I think it should be. So that's what I'm talking about, specifically getting help with the important things, such as your career strategy, your thought leadership strategy, and your happiness, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that leads on to ask the big questions and answer them.
Yeah, this is related. When you check in with yourself, that is what you're meant to be doing. So meditation, taking walks in nature, having a lion, sleeping in a bit, all those things help. But once you've relaxed a bit, once you've centered yourself, grounded yourself, to make the most of that, to get the best return on that investment of time and effort, is to ask the hard-hitting questions. Is this job, project, article, whatever, taking me closer to my goal or not? Am I really making progress towards my goal? Am I happy? And answer it, because we very rarely stop to reflect on things like this. And if I'm not happy, what do I need to be doing? What do I want to be doing? What kind of help is out there? What can I, who could I ask? Where could I even start? And answer those questions. Sit with a piece of paper and write down some ideas, because then it's captured. And even if you haven't got time to do everything on the action list, it's there, and you can do it over the following weeks or months.
Yeah, I think so often, in our pursuit for happiness, people forget to actually just look inside. And what I'm doing right now is making me happy. It doesn't have to be measured against other people's goals, other people's opinions. Yeah. And that's where a lot of people go wrong with this whole happiness story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think asking those questions and answering them is very, very difficult and a biggie. And so I think it's really good that people actually focus on it and try and make more effort. So nice.
We find that that's the most valuable part of the sessions that we run, certainly in companies. Most people won't ask themselves the right questions, or they don't know what questions to ask. And that's where coaching comes into its own, all kinds of coaching, but specifically this kind of coaching to develop people's creativity and clarity and confidence around their ideas and sharing those ideas. So sometimes they need to create a focus around it, they can get into the habit, and then maybe in future they can coach themselves.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And we're going to have this as a download, so there'll be a link to click onto where you can go through all the questions that, some of the few we've just touched on. So that's great. But now, what are you doing now? What is the work that you're doing? Is there a way that people can get help to be better thoughtful leaders?
Yes, absolutely. So thanks. I'll hold up that book again, won't you,
Jody? Hold on.
that's the easiest thing to do. That book is available in print and 4 different formats of ebook. I have to carve out some time and get into the studio and do the audio version. It's just relentless at the moment, but soon there'll be an audio version as well. On my website, mindygk.com, I've started to put links to all of my content, my videos, and I have specifically some video programs, and this is allowing people to interact with me. I have a course called How to Be a Real Thought Leader, and another one becoming a thoughtful leader. And with two of those, that's allowing, you know, normal people to access all my content. So those are two full-blown courses with, you may have seen them. And for people who are not going to be able to do this work in an organization, or, you know, but just to have a chat. One of my favorite expressions is, it's always worth a chat. And you know, you just never know where it's going to go. So if people have questions, comments, to connect with me on social media, find me, and, you know, we'll start the conversation one way or another.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm going to put all those links down so that people can find you easily. Now, all right. I'm all about laughter. And how do you think that laughter can help leaders be more thoughtful?
So there's one strategy, one thing that we do in particular, we have to learn to laugh at ourselves. So in my work, this is why it's helpful to do this on your own or with a coach one-to-one, because, you know, if you look at yourself and you think, oh, really? Okay, yeah, I've been acting like a you-know-what. It's much more fun to do that on your own at first and just come to terms with it and, you know, get that whole thing processed, and then you can laugh about it with other people. It's a bit raw if, you know, all your faults are you know, brought out in front of the whole crew every time. So I personally think there's a great benefit in learning to laugh at yourself. So, you know, lighten up, stop taking yourself so seriously, learn from your mistakes, and, you know, try something new. I have a lot of fun. I happen to laugh and smile a lot. You can tell by, you know, where I have my wrinkles. I don't mind. And, you know, I enjoy injecting a bit of that into a company culture, or, you know, sharing those ideas with a fellow entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's actually funny, because that's actually one of the exercises that we do. And we show people, and we invite them to try and laugh at themselves, because we do, as exactly what you just said, we do take ourselves so seriously, and that causes so many negative thoughts. We're not good enough. You start to doubt yourself. It's actually a ball that starts to roll, the snowballs, and then you just have all these thoughts. And so learning to let go by laughing at yourself is huge. Yes. So yeah, we've actually got an exercise.
Uh-huh, excellent.
Yeah. You see, so that's awesome. So is there a last thought that you'd like to, thoughtful point that you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Yeah, sure. We always spend a lot of time talking about the first meaning of thoughtful, which is putting thought into things and, you know, considering your concepts and ideas. The other side of thoughtful, of course, is the consideration, and that's consideration for others and caring. And one of the things that people always ask me, even though it's in the book, is, you know, can you really teach people to care? I think the answer is yes. And the answer is actually in one of the last chapters in the book, should people get the chance to read it. Because it starts with an intention. So, of course, you can learn anything, or you can get better at any skill, if you have the right intention and the desire to be better. And caring is no different. So people who don't care about caring, they're not going to do it. You know, whatever, I'm not a people person, and I, most people would like to be more thoughtful, considerate, and caring, but they don't know how. That's fine. We have a lot of how-tos in our material and courses and coaching. But if you have the intention, that's a really good place to start.
I think just being aware of it, and you know, once they realize the difference it will make in people's lives, I think that is just awesome. So, yay! Yeah. Thank you, Mindy. It's been awesome talking to you, and you've really given us some valuable things to think about. So, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. See you then. Bye.
Ciao.